Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas & Go at the Y, and Gas & Go at Mill Bay.
Good afternoon. It's 11:59 and 29 seconds. 57 degrees here in Kodiak right now. It's a beautiful day, Bob. We're looking for sunny skies with a high near 58. South wind about 5 miles per hour. For tonight, 10% chance of rain after 4 a.m. Mostly cloudy skies other than that, with a low around 47 tonight. South winds to 15 miles per hour. For tomorrow, we're looking for rain mainly after 10 a.m., a high near 54. East wind to 20 miles per hour, and your chance of precipitation tomorrow, 80%. Wednesday, we're looking for rain, high near 53, southeast wind to 25 miles per hour. For Wednesday night, rain is likely mainly before 10 p.m. Cloudy skies on Wednesday night with a low about 47, southeast wind to 20 miles per hour, and your chance of precipitation 60% on Wednesday. 50% chance of rain on Thursday, and just a chance of rain on Friday. But we're looking at chancy, rainy conditions all the way through the weekend. Cloudy skies, highs near in the mid-50s and lows in the 50 to 49 degree range. Happy birthday to Margaret Hall. Margaret's 101 years old today. And I think she got a little parade today as well. Stay tuned for local news right after these NPR headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. In a 6-3 ruling, the conservative-leaning U.S. Supreme Court has delivered a major legal victory for LGBTQ rights against discrimination in the workplace. NPR's Brian Naylor has more on today's landmark decision.
Two conservative justices, Chief Justice John Roberts and Trump nominee Neil Gorsuch, voted with the court's liberal bloc. Writing for the majority, Gorsuch said an employer who fires an individual for being homosexual or transgender fires that person for traits or actions it would not have questioned in members of a different sex. He said sex plays a necessary and undisguisable role in the decision, exactly what Title VII of the Civil Rights Act forbids. The ruling is a defeat for the Trump administration, which argued against expanding the definition of sex to include gender identity. LGBTQ groups, meanwhile, are cheering. The Human Rights Campaign calls it a landmark victory for LGBTQ equality. Brian Naylor, NPR News.
Civil rights groups have been fighting to weaken legal protections for police accused of using excessive and possibly lethal force. Were dealt a setback today when the nation's high court declined to take up the matter of qualified immunity. NPR's Amy Held has more on that.
The Supreme Court rejected a number of cases involving qualified immunity as a protest movement against police brutality and racial injustice sweeps the nation. But lawmakers locally and nationally are seeking to hold officers more accountable. A House bill is looking to weaken qualified immunity, making it easier to pursue criminal and civil action against police, while the GOP-led Senate has said weakening the doctrine is off the table.
NPR's Amy Held reporting on battles playing out in court, in Congress, and on the streets since George Floyd was killed last month in Minneapolis police custody. A new analysis from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention finds people diagnosed with COVID-19 who had underlying health conditions such as diabetes were 6 times more likely to be hospitalized. NPR's Allison Aubrey reports the analysis also adds to the evidence that minority communities have been hit hard by coronavirus.
Based on an analysis of about 600,000 confirmed COVID-19 cases, Hispanics accounted for about 1/3 of the cases. 22% were African American. The most common underlying conditions found were heart disease, diabetes, and chronic lung disease. And among those hospitalized, deaths were 12 times higher among patients with chronic diseases compared to those who reported none of these underlying conditions. When it comes to symptoms, 70% noted fever, cough, or shortness of breath, 36% reported muscle aches, 34% a headache, and just 8% reported loss of smell or taste. Allison Aubrey, NPR News.
This is NPR. Planned Parenthood is endorsing former Vice President Joe Biden for president. While advocates of abortion rights have criticized Biden's record on the issue, the group says its top priority this year is to deny President Trump a second term in office. They cite the GOP's state-level actions to limit women's access to abortions and the president's conservative judicial appointments that they view as part of a larger effort to do away with reproductive rights. The U.S. Census Bureau says households that have not yet filled out 2020 census forms that were sent to their homes may get a knock on their front doors as early as July. NPR's Hansi Lo Wang reports the Census Bureau is moving up the start date for those visits to test out new procedures put in place because of the coronavirus pandemic.
The Census Bureau says starting in mid-July, workers wearing personal protective equipment and trained in social distancing are heading to some parts of the U.S. for a soft launch of in-person visits to unresponsive homes. Households that have not turned in a census form yet can still fill it out on their own. The Bureau says it's planning to keep collecting census responses online, through the mail, and over the phone until the end of October. Because of the pandemic, the counting of people experiencing homelessness has been pushed back to late September. Census results are used to determine each community's share of some $1.5 trillion a year in federal tax dollars for Medicare, Medicaid, and other public services. Hansi Lo Wang, NPR News, New York.
Another annual event will be delayed due to the pandemic. Next year's Oscars will be postponed from February to April. The Dow closes up 157 points, or more than 0.5%. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from DuckDuckGo, a privacy company committed to raising the standard of trust online. Used by millions, they work to help people search privately and avoid trackers. DuckDuckGo, privacy simplified. And the listeners who support this NPR station.
Welcome to your local news here on KMXT at 100.1 FM. A 30-year-old man was killed on Saturday at a secure military facility on Kodiak. Alaska state troopers confirmed the man was Jason Vinberg, but did not specify at which facility he died. Troopers responded to a call around 10:30 p.m. on Saturday that a person was shot in a secure facility in the Kodiak area. Here are the details from the trooper report. Investigation revealed that a watch guard inside a secure facility observed a male trespassing and tapping on the windows of a watch building with a knife. The duty officer advised the male that he needed to leave the premises. The duty officer exited the building to confirm that the male was leaving the area. Instead, the male started to walk toward the duty officer and the man brandished a knife. The male failed to obey the duty officer's repeated commands to stop walking toward him. The duty officer produced a handgun and shot the male. The male was declared deceased by responding medics and was ultimately identified as Jason Vinberg, age 30, of Kodiak. Vinberg's next of kin was notified. Kodiak patrol troopers initially responded to secure the scene. ABI investigators responded from Anchorage to investigate and have assumed case responsibility. This investigation is being conducted as a joint investigation between ABI and Naval Criminal Investigative Unit. The report says the watch guard's name won't be released until consultation with the Alaska U.S. Attorney's Office and Naval Criminal Investigative Unit is complete. This is a breaking story. KMXT will have more information available during the 5 p.m. newscast. Starting Monday, Alaskans can apply for a lottery designed to provide some financial relief if they are struggling with making rent or mortgage payments. Jared Griffin with KMXT News talked with Stacy Barnes of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation to find out how this new $10 million program will help Kodiak.
This week, the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, the state housing authority, announced a $10 million program to assist Alaskans with their rent and mortgage obligations. This funding is a slice of the $1.5 billion the state received from the Federal CARES Act to use for homeless prevention with a focus on Alaskans who lost income due to COVID-19 and, without government assistance, may otherwise lose their housing to eviction or foreclosure. Families in Alaska with households that have lost income and are at less than 80% of the area median income as a result of COVID-19 are eligible to apply for up to 1 month of rent or mortgage relief. Each household is eligible for no more than $1,200. Rent relief includes utilities. Mortgage relief includes principal and interest only. Stacy Barnes, Vice President of Government Relations and spokesperson for the program, explained what the qualifications mean for Kodiak.
So they would have to be in Kodiak at $78,720 annually or less in order to apply. And if they go to that website, AlaskaHousingRelief.org, they'll be able to check their eligibility for that.
Barnes also noted that this financial relief will go straight to the renter's landlord or the homeowner's mortgage lender, and they may apply it to any back payments owed or apply it to July or August's payment.
Well, I think that it will depend based on whether they're in arrears. And if they are behind, that money is going to be applied toward their May or June rent. If they are current on it but have experienced the hardship and qualify for the assistance, that money would go toward their July or August rent, depending on when the payment is made to the landlord or to the lender.
The idea of a lottery is unique to state housing assistance programs funded by the CARES Act. Other states use a first-in-line approach or a needs-based system, and the AHFC recognizes that a lottery system can confuse the public. There is no cost to enter the lottery, and it was devised by the corporation to better assist rural and remote Alaskans, and even Kodiakans out fishing.
But one of the things that we were sensitive to here is, first, we already utilize a lottery program in our public housing in Anchorage, where we often see the number of people who are telling us that they have need is greater than the number of units that we have available. And it's a process that's worked really well for us. But we also thought about people, frankly, who live in Kodiak and might be on a boat. We've seen and learned from a variety of programs connected to the CARES Act that in a first-in, first-out methodology, we would be putting a lot of stress on Alaskans to perhaps get off their boat, to be there, to apply on June 15th, first thing right away, so that they could have access to those funds.
Barnes estimates that this program will help between 8 and 12,000 households, about 5% of all households in Alaska. And that's just an estimate of Alaskans' need at this time.
So we don't have really good data right now on how many people are actually behind on their rent or behind on their mortgage, other than what we see in our own portfolio. So on a statewide basis, that will be really helpful information that we'll be able to get.
The process for applying for rent or mortgage relief is simple. Go to AlaskaHousingRelief.org to access the online application or call or text RELIEF to 833-440-0420 if you are unable to access the application online. The application period begins at 7 a.m. Monday, June 15th and ends at 11:59 p.m. on June 26th. The brief application includes a basic questionnaire asking your name, primary address, and certification of loss of income.
Really, the entire application process should take less than 5 minutes.
The lottery will take place when the application period closes. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation will then pool all names using an established practice in public housing, then run a randomized statewide lottery. When chosen, recipients will be asked to provide additional information that verifies their loss of income and includes contact information for their landlord or mortgage lender.
The income requirement does apply to those who have lost income as a result of COVID-19. So it could be reduced hours, it could be total layoff, could be any number of things that have affected their business. If they're a small business and they've had to close doors or reduce hours, they would obviously be able to qualify for this program.
Payment distribution is targeted for July 2020. While Alaska's Housing Assistance Lottery provides a short-term gap stop for struggling households, there is no long-term housing assistance plan in the wake of the economic devastation caused by the COVID-19 pandemic, which has concerned many economists as the United States has been in recession since February. Alaska households struggling to meet rent and mortgage obligations in recent months have had the security of Senate Bill 241, the statewide moratorium on foreclosures and evictions, which Governor Mike Dunleavy signed in May. But the moratorium is set to end on June 30th, and Governor Dunleavy has not indicated if the state will extend that moratorium. For KMXT News, I'm Jared Griffin.
Families already receiving public housing assistance from the AHFC are not eligible for this program, but may receive rent relief under another program funded by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. Cody Atkins can learn more about the lottery and its program requirements, and also about other relief programs at alaskahousingrelief.org, where you can also submit a request to be reminded when the application period opens. The Alaska Permanent Fund dividend going out in July will be $992. The amount announced Friday is $8 less than the legislature estimated when it budgeted for the PFD. The difference is due to a higher than expected amount being set aside to cover other costs paid out for the dividend funding. Alaska Permanent Fund Dividend Director Ann Weske described the differences for Alaskans.
If they look at their stub when they get their PFD, similar to a paycheck, you have a gross amount and a net amount.
Those costs include allowing Alaskans who would be ineligible to receive social services if dividends were counted in their income to continue to receive benefits. They also include paying the administrative costs of the division that oversees the PFD program, as well as the health care of prisoners in the state. Dividends will be going out July 1st, more than 3 months earlier than normal. Roughly 640,000 Alaskans will receive PFDs this year. Of those, 580,000 are scheduled to receive them in early July. Weske says that the division is working to check the information on the rest of the applications to get those dividends out as soon as possible.
Quite a bit earlier in the season than we're used to paying it. And so we are working at mock speeds with temp staff on board to help us out, but we're just asking for patience from Alaskans.
The last time the dividend was less than $1,000 was 2013. Alaskans got $900 that year. Governor Mike Dunleavy has said that he wants the state to follow the formula of the 1982 state law. His office estimated the amount under that formula would have made more than $3,000. Majorities in both chambers rejected that proposal, with lawmakers saying that drawing from the permanent fund's earnings reserve to pay out more would threaten the financial health of the fund, the dividend, the state budget, and the future of the state's economy. More than 160 doctors and other health care providers have asked Governor Mike Dunleavy to mandate that Alaskans wear face masks in businesses where keeping at least 6 feet away from others isn't realistic. But as Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports, the governor isn't making that change for now.
The letter emphasizes there's growing evidence that masks reduce the spread of the disease. Dr. Megan Ritter wrote the letter along with Dr. Sarah Murphy. Ritter notes that Dunleavy has already explained why people should wear masks.
If we don't get enough people to follow that, which I haven't seen that it has been, then it will increase transmission, and it does put our healthcare facilities at risk with increased caseloads, and it does put our economy at risk with potentially having to shut down again.
Both doctors live and work in Anchorage. Ritter is a pathologist, and Murphy's a family doctor. Ritter says Dunleavy's hunker-down mandate that closed many businesses in late March was effective. But after the governor lifted those restrictions, far fewer Alaskans are wearing masks. Along with Murphy, Ritter asked other healthcare providers to sign on last weekend and sent the letter on Monday.
What I was really hoping is that we could get a jump on this and maybe prevent a lot of suffering.
Most signers are doctors, but the list also includes nurses, physician assistants, and other providers. Ritter says there's a misunderstanding that requiring masks will hurt businesses. She says the virus spreading will hurt more.
We want Alaska to thrive. We want businesses to be able to stay open, and we want employees to stay healthy.
Ritter says the decision on masks should be based on medical science.
And that's why I don't want it to be political. I just want to put out there that this is another option. Please consider it. It's pretty simple, and it seems to be highly effective as best we can tell.
So far, Dunleavy hasn't changed his mind. In a news conference on Wednesday, he walked through his own approach to masks.
If it were me, and I'm going to go into an environment where there are seniors or those folks that may have underlying health conditions, I'll wear a mask.
But he says he won't speak through a mask when he's invited to speak at a get-together. Dunleavy wants each person to decide.
I think we do best when we give Alaskans information, ask them to use their best judgment in the situations that we're in. And I think we're going to have, we're probably going to get better outcomes there.
And Dunleavy says healthcare providers aren't united on masks.
There are folks all over the map on this issue. There are doctors all over the map on this issue. And I have friends that are doctors. I have friends that are physician's assistants. I have family members that are docs. Different opinions on this.
The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention guidance says people older than 2 should wear cloth face coverings where other social distancing measures are difficult to maintain. Alaska Chief Medical Officer Dr. Ann Zink also is advocating wearing a mask. In a series of tweets, Zink wrote that she wears a mask in public to practice humility, since she doesn't know if she has the virus, and it's clear people can spread it before they have symptoms. She says she wants to be kind, and doesn't know if a person she's near has a child battling cancer or cares for an elderly mother, and she wants her community to thrive and businesses to stay open. Ritter says the doctors will continue to urge the governor to consider a mandate on masks as he weighs the information that comes into him each day. She says 40 more providers have signed the letter since Monday. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor llama al 907-481-2400.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
And by Ardinger's Fine Furnishings, proud to offer a variety of sofas and love seats made in Oregon by Stanton, as well as massage and zero-gravity chairs by Human Touch. Find the fabric and style that fits your lifestyle in the store or by special order. Also featuring inviting rugs, lamps, and accessories for your home at Ardinger's, 486-5554.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. What's best about living in a small fishing town? Kodiak shares its thoughts after this.
Grundins urges everyone to buy seafood directly from community-supported fisheries at localcatch.org. Your CSF purchases will help U.S. fishing towns thrive. Grundins, supporting fisheries around the world since 1926.
What are some of the best things about living in a small fishing town? There are no malls and limited shopping. It's far from the mainland, and travel can be tricky. Fish Radio talked to Kodiak locals to find out why they choose small-town living.
I came to Kodiak for my job at a museum and really didn't know anything about commercial fishing. But I've learned a bit over the years, and I'm really impressed at the amount of skill and knowledge it takes to be a fisherman. And, you know, I'm really grateful for all the resources and the amount of economic contribution fishing is to Kodiak. It looks like we're moving up in the fishing industry. That makes me proud to live in Kodiak, that we're doing so well.
One of my favorite things about living in Kodiak is in this terrible world economic downturn, we're isolated, not affected as much.
I like that we could pretty much live off the land.
The fishing, the sport fishing is amazing around here.
I like that it's seasonal.
you get to see the boats all in the harbor, and then the next day they're all gone. And I also like all the fresh seafood that is coming in year-round that we get to enjoy.
Fish and boats. I love it all.
Knowing people, having a community setting where we know each other and care for each other.
It's a great place to raise a family.
You get to know a lot of people, and it is a sense of community.
I've lived in small communities for, 20 years or so, but the people here are extremely nice. Like, there are a lot of small towns, but there's something about Kodiak, and the people here are truly amazing. And it's just a beautiful place. There's really nothing like it around Alaska.
Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods, who gives a big thanks to everyone fishing across Alaska and to all the coastal communities they depend on. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 2, date issued June 12th at 10 a.m. There will be a 33-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Sunday, June 14th until 9 p.m. Monday, June 15th in the following areas. In the northwest Kodiak District, the southwest Afognak, northwest Afognak, Paul's Bay, and Paranosa Bay sections of the Afognak District, the east side Kodiak District, and the Big River and outer Kukak Bay sections of the mainland district. Closed waters will be reduced from noon Sunday, June 14th until 9 p.m. Monday, June 15th in the following areas. At Kapthea Creek, stream number 262301 to the stream terminus, and at Saltry Creek, stream number 259415 to the stream terminus. As previously announced, the following areas remain open to commercial fishing until further notice. The Inner Katoy, Outer Katoy, Duck Bay, and Nisuit Bay sections of the Afognak District, the Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area, and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Fishermen are reminded that in the Kodiak area, including the mainland district, until further notice, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse hang gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Closed waters are reduced in the following locations. In Fowl Bay to the stream terminus at Hidden Lake Creek, stream number 251406. In Waterfall Bay to the stream terminus at Little Waterfall Creek, stream number 251822. And stream number, or Big Waterfall Creek, stream number 251821. And in Katoy Bay to the fishing game markers located at Little Katoy Bay and Big Katoy Bays near stream numbers 252323 and 252324. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart, detailed in Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations, and Statistical Charts, Harvest Strategies, and Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
The Kodiak Library opened today by appointment for 8 people at a time. Appointment periods are 11 a.m., 1 p.m., and 3 p.m. To schedule an appointment, call them at 486-8686. There will be a Board of Education regular meeting tonight. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room. For more information, call Bianca at 486-7566. The Assembly Special Work Session is having a special work session tonight at 6:30 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers. The Consolidation Committee meeting is also having a meeting tonight at 6:30 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers. There might be a little conflict there. I suspect that the Consolidation Committee will actually be downstairs in the meeting room. On tomorrow, the Architectural Review Board meeting will be having a meeting in the Borough Conference Room at 5:30 p.m., the Architectural Review Board. On Thursday, the Assembly will be having their regular meeting at 6:30 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers. And on next Monday, the Solid Waste Advisory Board will be having their regular meeting at 5:15 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers. A lot is going on there with the bare roll carts, etc. KMXT Board of Directors are having their next regular monthly meeting on Tuesday, that's tomorrow, 6 p.m. via Zoom. If you'd like to sit in on the meeting, call the station at 486-3181 or send an email requesting access to gm@kmxt.org.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day,
Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.